Hello and welcome to the Oldies August podcast. Today we're joined by George Courtauld, a former Queen's Messenger and best-selling author of The Travels of a Fat Bulldog. Today he will talk to us about his grandmother, Daisy Dobell, whose diaries he's just edited and published. So George, where did you find these diaries?
Well, we've been five generations at the same house. We've got lots of old furniture, which we which came, many of it, from a house even before that. So we've got sort of Regency desks and so forth. And at the age of 80, I decided it was about time I started mucking out and clearing up and tidying my affairs before the Grim Reaper came. And I found in the back of a bureau, those are the sort of desks with sloping fronts, three red books. I took them out and opened them up, and the first book said Daisy Dobell, Whittington Court, Gloucester, 1888. And it was my grandmother. And I started to read it and was absolutely enchanted. I read the whole thing in one sitting, all 64,000 words, sitting cross-legged on the top of our staircase next to this old bureau. And I was astonished because I knew her as a little old lady, really, a musing, giggly one, but the extraordinary frankness of her passion when she was 14 or 15 for the boys of Cheltenham College, and her cleverness in assessing people even at a very early age. For example, she said of her governess, Miss Tompkins says, I am very wild, but actually she is rather prim. And I thought, she is an extraordinary character, and it's when you know somebody well, and then you find you don't know them as well as you thought. It's rather like reading an obituary, and some dear old boy who you think is the old gardener for your neighbours turns out to be a war hero. It's the same sort of surprise, if you see what I mean.
You get the impression that she's so very perceptive early on, but also, as you say, she's, dare I say it, maybe a tad flirtatious.
Very much so.
There seems sort of the phases of her. So there's flirty Daisy. There's also naughty Daisy. Could you tell us about her?
Well, naughty Daisy is not as naughty as it might seem. When I rang up Whittington Court and said, "I'm terribly sorry to intrude in your privacy, but I've." Editing my grandmother's diaries, and when she lived in your house, and have you ever heard of Daisy Dobell? And Jenny Stringer, who was the owner and inhabitant of the house with her family, said, "We certainly have heard of Daisy Dobell. We call her Naughty Daisy because she's carved her name all over the old Tudor woodwork of our house."
So what was the actual? What's the house like? What was it as a place to grow up in?
It's a lovely place to grow up in. It had a moat. It hasn't now, but it's got the remains of a moat. And it's a typical, very attractive Cotswold Tudor house. It actually goes back further. But I think it's in one of the 1,000 best houses in England. And the author, whose name I forget, something like Jenkins, said it's absolutely marvellous with its setting next to the church, all surrounded by yews. And it's a triple gabled house with very interesting interior timbers carved, as I say, with Daisy Dobell. And the staircase, which is a marvellous staircase, quarter of the way up is a dog gate, which is quite rare. And Helen Allingham, who was a great watercolourist in the sort of Victorian times, did a marvellous painting of either my grandmother or her sister Maud halfway up the staircase with a cat. And in fact, I got permission to reproduce it on the back of the book.
Oh, lovely. You mentioned Maud. What were her family like, and how did she interact with them?
Sorry, which family?
When she grew up, her sort of siblings, her parents, who constituted the whole family? Who were they?
The Dobells had originally come over probably as Huguenots and worked their way up socially, I suppose you could say, from being dissenters and slightly dour Puritans. Rather like my own family, who came over as Huguenots. And like my own family, they worked their way into the sort of Church of England Tory hierarchy of their area. But they never were completely normal for Gloucestershire, because though they had lots of smart, as it's called nowadays, Gloucester friends, like the Sitwells and so forth, they were very bohemian. And Uncle Sidney Dobell was a famous poet and looked like one, rather like Napoleon III, you know, with a little pointy beard and enormous moustaches. And Britton Riviere, another uncle, was, I think, head of the Royal Academy. Mm. And so they were quite an arty lot, and they knew Tennyson and Holman Hunt. And sadly, Daisy doesn't really mention them. She mentions more of her friends and family. And the family was quite a big family. There were two cousins with big families living next to each other in the same village.
So to no influence drawn from the artistic and literary circles?
No.
But more on Daisy herself. Early on in the diary, she's very critical of herself. She describes herself as spotty, quarrelsome, and jealous.
Yes.
Why?
I think I have an inkling reading it's slightly false modesty. I think she was actually, as you can see from the cover of the book, very pretty in a sort of fluffy blonde way, unlike her beloved cousin Eva, who was completely opposite, rather swarthy and dark. But she, being besotted about boys, which you can read not necessarily between the lines, you know, she says, "I wish I'd breasted my wary head on his shoulders," but of course I didn't. But you know, I don't know about girls, but certainly boys get agonised over their spots and various other unattractive aspects.
You mentioned Eva, who's a sort of course a famous poet.
Yes.
She plays a role throughout all of Daisy's life, as far as I can see from the diary. How would you characterise their relationship?
I think an intense affection, woman to woman, not in a way which it would be reckoned in those days kinky or weird, just love for each other. I see two of my granddaughters from different parents, from my different children. They too are terrific friends. They amuse each other. They go out together and they gossip. And Daisy was, in a way, even though her family was enormous, slightly on a limb, particularly with her hatred of her younger brother, who was just like Just William, and in fact became an enormously important scientist. And Eva was just her age, and they lived a mile apart in the same village, and they wrote each other letters, and they were just utterly, terribly affectionate friends, and remained so for another 60 or 70 years.
Mm. And in Daisy's later life, after the separation from your grandfather, her husband, she continues to be this support for her.
Yes, yeah. Yes, because when Grandmama was living alone in her, I thought, beastly little flat in Dorset Square, she had lots of friends and relations who used to drop in and see her. But Aunt Eva became blind and didn't travel, but they talked a lot, on the telephone.
Mm-hmm. And so, a bit more on the diary itself. When she stops writing in about 1900, or that's when...
Well, she started at the age of 12 in 1888, and was pretty intensive writing for the first... until she was about 17, and then other things sort of distracted her. So it trails slightly to a halt, and she said, "Oh, awful, I haven't put anything in this diary for 4 or 5 months. During that period of it being rather scattered, she meets my grandfather, she gets engaged, she goes to grown-up parties, and everything's slightly different from the idyllic life of the sort of Daisy Ashford-type life of a growing-up girl.
So the diary is very much that of a child, well, a child growing up, really.
Yes. It does start from the age of being 12 and ends at 20, but the last bits are very disjointed.
Right. Okay. And did she stop writing after that completely? I mean, so later on in her life, after sort of, did she ever take it back up again?
Yes, she did, and I don't include it because the book, the diary ends. Those three red books end in a high note, pretty high, mm-hmm. a bit apprehensive about being married. But then it goes on in the other notes and things, and it's really utterly sad because she had a beastly time with my grandfather, who had the morals of a goat, quite frankly, and had several mistresses and was not nice to her. And I was very angry as she reading her unhappiness. And she also wrote an enormous amount of letters. One of the bits of furniture I mentioned early on is absolutely crammed with letters she mainly wrote to her son, my father. So she was busy.
But did you not want to include any of the letters? Or are the letters, again, like her last diary entries on a not quite so cheerful note?
Well, I think they're probably slightly slightly more boring. I mean, I picked up several. It says, "Dear George," namely my father, "thank you for the brace of pheasants," which I don't think she actually was that keen because she had to find somebody to pluck them. He was always coming round with pheasants. And so they're not terribly exciting because she didn't have a very exciting life. It's mainly letters full of questions, particularly when my father was in SOE and in the war. She was saying, what are you doing? Who are these people? What's this fat man, Mr. Churchill, doing? All that. I'll get perhaps the next generation, my grandchildren or great-grandchildren, to go through all these bits of paper. My house is absolutely crammed with letters going right back to 1700.
So you mentioned your grandfather, John René Courtauld.
Yes.
How do they sort of find one another?
The Dobells, as I said, were dissenters and Puritans and Unitarians, and as was my family. And somehow or other, we were very vaguely related. And so a friend of a friend introduced John René. And Guy, Daisy's brother, and he decided to start up a brewery together, which never succeeded. And my grandfather, from all the nasty things I've said about him, was extremely attractive. He was very good looking, very handsome, and had a beautiful bass singing voice and an enormous charm, which he used to effect, except to his grandchildren. He was always moaning and moping when I used to meet him. I was saying, I'm going to be dead soon. Of course, he was right in the end. He died at the age of 78. But they met through mutual friends, come cousins, and they got on, and they were both attractive people, which happens. But they just, everything's a bit naive in those days. You know, I think sex was started. Dear Grandmama's ideas. She said in one part of her diary, Ava and I drew all the different ways of making sex. Making love. Well, actually, I've seen the drawings, and they're sort of one chap on his knees holding a girl's hand, you know. Nothing to do with the Kama Sutra.
but their marriage lasted for 12 years.
Yes.
And at what point did Daisy sort of move on?
In her diary, she said it was never good from the start. Could have been in bed or something, you know, things are like that. They went on a frightfully dreary honeymoon on bicycles and around Brittany. I mean, that's pretty well a good start to ruin a honeymoon. And they moved into a little watermill in a village 2 miles from where I live now called Pemmarsh, which was the site in 1789 of the first Corto textile mill. And it was a super lovely, cosy little place, but she was surrounded by the Corto clan, which consisted of about 12 people, including five very tough girls, all very nice but strong suffragettes, and my great aunt Min, who was a farmed 2,000 acres and wore boots and a pork pie hat, and the men, who are actually rather more feeble than the women, but still got two MCs amongst them. So she found herself from the rather cosy Cotswold clan to the Corto clan.
So I get the sense from that she was very isolated throughout. I mean, to a degree after separation also, but even during the marriage she was very isolated.
Yes, she writes in one of the sad, pitiful things, my only friend is Araminta, which was her doll. When I talked to my aunts and things about her, they all liked her a lot, but they had their own lives. There was even a Corto female hockey team.
But her own sort of family, you mentioned her, she hated her brother.
She was always smacking him, the poor little fellow.
So not get on too well with her siblings in early life. Did this relationship improve?
Enormously.
And
the reason she didn't get, she was slightly jealous of Maud, her sister, who attracted all the male attention. She loved her brothers, except for Bella, being the youngest, Herbert. They rallied round, I think, very, very much so when she showed how miserable and unhappy she was. And Bella, who changed from being a just William, naughty, disobedient, teasing little boy, to one of the top men in Marconi's radio wireless setup. It's rather strange, that.
And so did they sort of... There's not much more proximity as the time went on. So when she moved to Dorset Square, were they a lot more present? Did they ever manage to meet? Did they ever visit her when?
I think they visited her slightly on routine. You know, as one does with.
No, of course.
You know, but she was greatly loved by, except from her husband, and my father used to see a lot of her, of course. But she never came to Essex again, as far as I know.
And I think that's rather a good place to end. So, George, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's been quite an experience.
Another time, I hope.
Yes.